Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Tyler, this felt a bit like the deep breath episode of Dynamite. Everyone take a deep breath. We're going to bookend the show with our world title tournament semifinals. We're going to have two lengthy matches of around 15 minutes. And we're going to set up the finals with a stare down between our two top remaining healthy stars. And we're going to let you know to tune in next week to see those two wrestle. They're going to shake hands because everybody gets along. Well, not everybody, but, you know, our top guys get along. And they're going to have a classic next week. The people who are left are people we believe in, and we're going to start giving some TV time to some other people in the middle, I think with mixed results, but that seemed to be the kind of the mission tonight, and in that sense, mission accomplished, even if the middle of the show had some ups and downs.
Yeah, I would more so agree with you than not. I think, you know, I probably like the tag team title match more than you did by the sound of it, but you know, that straddled the 9 o'clock, start of the 9 o'clock hour on the East Coast, so But yeah, I agree that the open, the close, and I think that middle tag match were the highlights of the show for the reasons you described. And I assume a vast majority of our conversation tonight with the callers, at least, will be all that stuff in the middle, because people love to talk about odd promos, and the firm sure had one tonight. So I'm sure we'll talk about that for a majority of this evening. So yes, but I would agree with your assessment. That's kind of my final thoughts in my report were matching yours pretty closely.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the tournament, because that is the big news of the show. Moxley beating Sammy Guevara in the opener, and then Bryan Danielson making a spirited comeback and getting a tap-out win over Chris Jericho. Either of those finishes surprise you? Does anything about how either of those matches were booked or laid out or executed surprise you?
No, I mean, you know, I think Moxley had to go to the finals no matter what happened. He had the easier path with Darby / Sammy being his first opponent. And, you know, a lot of rematches, you know, Jericho and Danielson just happening, and then Jericho and Moxley happening a few weeks ago, where, you know, Chris Jericho looked like a faucet when his nose was, it looked like broken. I guess it wasn't, but, you know, so it's going to be, it would be hard to top that. The story of, you know, what we saw tonight, the shaking of the hands, the team members fighting, but probably not, you know, still being friends at the end of it is a good kayfabe way to patch over, you know, some of the backstage stuff that's going on in AEW. So I think that kind of works for Tony Khan on multiple levels. So, yeah, all that is kind of what I thought was going to happen. The only thing I was surprised about was two things. The match with Sammy Guevara at the beginning, I mean, Jon Moxley's on, you know, his elite, his apex mountain, if you will, and him having this type of match with Sammy Guevara, who tends to not be, you know, he still did high-flying moves, but I think it was the best version of Sammy Guevara from a psychology standpoint that I've seen for a long, long time, and I think that's all credit to Jon Moxley and the way the match was set up. And then in the main event, I was surprised there was no blood, because I feel like in AEW of 3 weeks ago, one of those two guys would be bleeding before the first commercial break, and I think that was a nice touch to have a really, really strong main event, and no one had to blade to, you know, as a prove it that you don't have to do that in every match to make it feel special. So those are my two kind of surprises.
I wonder if CM Punk hadn't taken the shot at Moxley, like, I'd fight back, but you just bleed all over me. If that made Moxley not self-conscious about bleeding, because I think Moxley knows who he is and believes in who he is, but might think, you know what, he drew some attention to something that could become a caricature of my character. So let's not do it, you know? And I think that is noteworthy. And I like Moxley at least, I want to say like 60% of the time, is that too much? Not bleeding and not brawling outside the ring and not using weapons, not having special stips. I think he's better than he gives himself credit for. And maybe I'm wrong on how he feels about not having all the extra stuff. Because I think part of it is he just loves the extra stuff. It's not out of insecurity that he's not good without it. It's just he loves having it. But I really like when he just gets in the ring. And granted, Danielson is a good opponent to do it with, but where there's not a lot of extra stuff going. I'm conflating my two matches here. But with Sammy, Sammy's a good athletic opponent we can do that with and have a straight up match. And I like that. I want Moxley to do that more often, and you know, pick the right opponent to do it against. And I thought tonight it worked. I thought Sammy throughout the match looked like he belonged with Moxley, but I didn't at all think this should be his night. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, this is the time to put Sammy over. Moxley already traded wins with Punk, and it's been there, done that. Like, you know, and I don't know if anyone was thinking that, but I'm saying under other circumstances, you could imagine that. 6 months ago, I said this match is happening. You might think, oh, maybe that'll be the moment they elevate Sammy. I just don't think Sammy's track record this year put him in a position where there's any doubt that was the right finish. But I don't have any problem with him being in that spot because I think it reminded us that he is really good and still can be a single star, even if he's had a rough year with some tone deafness and the baby face and going back to kind of being a Jericho sidekick. Yeah, I thought it was just a good night for Sammy. It didn't define him down. I just thought it solidified him as still somebody you can drop into a slot like that and get a good credible TV match out of it, where it looks like Moxley accomplished something for winning. And, you know, I think they did a good job with Danielson and Jericho. When Danielson hurt his ankle, you know, and the psychology, you know, intent of that, I'll say, was to make it seem like, oh, yeah, we're getting Jericho the heel against Moxley the face, and Danielson has the out now. He landed hard on his ankle, and that's going to be the reason, and now we got the figure four, and Jericho's going to, you know, just win, and okay, that's fine. And that's what they, you know, wanted to make you think, and I think it worked. You know, I thought that might be a possibility. I wasn't thinking this is a red herring. But then it made Danielson's win all the more impressive. And I like to stare it on afterwards. Like, sometimes simpler is better. And when you look at the bookend semifinals, this was just good, straightforward booking with the wrestlers doing what they do well, being presented there's no meta stuff, there's no, you know, like, major angles or swerves. It was just, we're just going to have matches, and there's going to be winners and losers. And I like that. That's why I say it's kind of a deep breath show, because the stakes were high, the talent was good, the personalities are over, and they just let them go out there and do their thing for 15 minutes in the opener and 20 minutes in the main event.
Yeah, and then the only thing I have on that is, this is all speculation by me, but, you know, this whole tournament, how we got here, you know, this kind of taking a breath, it all feels a little bit like, you know, again, speculation by me, but, you know, it feels like Tony Khan's coming out of his, you know, in the main event, he is pretty hard fast, and this is the story we're telling, and it always kind of, it's felt like a square peg in a circle, right? It's all, hasn't really felt.
We tend to call them round holes.
Round holes, yeah, sorry.
I'm here for Tyler.
Yeah. You know, I was just trying to make an analogy on Aries, yeah. But, yeah, it feels this is a little bit more like, you know, taking a deep breath, like you said, and Tony Khan might be asking around and like, hey, what is like the most simple, straightforward wrestling story to tell here? And he might be listening to a key number of people. And this is, you know, one of the better stories that the world title has had in a long time. And I think that would be my assumption of what's happening here. So that's all positive.
So let's just get to it. What's going to happen next week? Or do you think it can go either way?
Yeah, I still think with Moxley's promo on the episode of Dynamite after All Out and, you know, what that means from a character standpoint, from what he said in his promos and just from a, you know, for people that are in the know, I think what that would mean, the stability, all that sort of stuff, that makes more sense for Moxley to get the win here. You know, outside the ring stuff, does he really need a vacation for a while and need some time off? That's kind of in the back of my mind. But Moxley in MJF to me is a better story coming out of this tournament. Feels like the hottest thing that AEW can do. You know, MJF's promo tonight signaled to that, so that could be a red herring. I think, you know, we have not seen MJF and Danielson before, so that's interesting. But my guess right now is Moxley goes over in a, you know, 25-30 minute match and becomes, if he's not already, that legend that he has talked about promos, and that's just kind of the coronation for him in that as the ace of AEW next week.
Very good. Yeah, I think Moxley's going to win. If Danielson wins, I applaud Tony for having a bit of a unexpected outcome that would be intriguing. And I hope it's done not just to shock us or surprise us or be the unexpected. If he's got a good reason for it, great. But I agree with everything you said. It seems like it's Moxley's time. He already lost to Punk. If you have him lose again after that speech last week, if I'm Moxley, I'm like, I don't like this. You know, let's crown me. Let me carry this. Let me carry the main event men's world title spot on my back. And you know I'll deliver on the mic. You know I'll deliver in the ring. Just let me do it. And I think Brian Danielson's like, yeah, let Mox do it. My time will come. But this isn't it. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's a foregone conclusion. And, you know, I think Danielson as champion is a fresh and newsworthy outcome that wouldn't feel like you're going back to the guy who lost to the guy who got hurt / got suspended / wants out, whatever's going on with Punk. And so, you know, the only reason to do that – well, I shouldn't say the only reason. I would actually frame it as a danger in doing that would be you might be telling fans, yeah, we really don't believe in Moxie. That's why we had Punk beat him, and it's only due to circumstances he's back in the finals, and we don't see him as the top guy, so now we're going to try Danielson for a little while. I don't know that you want to send that message if you're Tony.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, in a different time, maybe that's less of a concern for me personally if I'm Tony Khan, but right now it seems like you kind of need to run with the guy who is the best ambassador for your company at this moment.
Yep. All right, let's pause and introduce ourselves, and then we'll get on with the show. We do expect an on-site correspondent to be joining us in a bit, and we welcome your calls and emails, and we'll give you information on that in just a moment. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, September 14th, 2022, and I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter, which predates most of you being born. And, I don't know, based on our stats, maybe not most, but many, about half of you. And also predates the internet and certainly predates podcasting. I started it back in high school in the late 80s. I used to say this, but then it just sounded like it was forever ago, and I don't feel old at all. But it was when Ronald Reagan was president. It was like the final, you know, couple months, but still, it's just crazy because that feels like ancient history. It's like I might as well say FDR or, you know, something about Churchill when I say that. I've been covering wrestling a long time, still really enjoying it, and I love the podcast format, and therefore I do a lot of podcasts during the week, including the post shows, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast, our blue logo show. This is our red logo show. That's our post shows. You can listen live. You can also download them on our podcast feed. And then the blue logo show is our main podcast with some flashbacks, pay-per-view previews, interviews, and our weekly flagship, which tomorrow will feature Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Rich Fan. So join us for that. Look for that on Thursday night. The other voice you hear so far on the show is Tyler Sage. I talked about the podcast format. Tyler, you enjoy the podcast format. You also enjoy the on-camera YouTube format, and you are a big part of the PW Torch YouTube channel. Welcome back to the co-host chair.
Hey, thanks for having me. I guess it's time for plugs. But yeah, the YouTube channel, let's talk about that. So myself and Zach Adorn, I think are the two faces you'll see a lot on there. But every week we do the Fireside Chat on Thursdays at 4 p.m. Eastern live. So please join us there. Like, subscribe to the channel if you are a VIP member or not. You help the channel grow. We very much appreciate that. But we talk about the hottest news of the week. And, you know, when we have weeks like last week, I think we hopped on three or four times outside of the normal window, and we're building out that channel as we go. So look for more shows in the near future, but so check me out there. You can also read my alternative reports on for Dynamite. And then I have a VIP exclusive podcast recapping the AEW Rampage show, which should be a good one this week. So yeah, all that stuff, but yeah, check out the YouTube, please. YouTube.com/PWTorch.
Yeah. Rampage should be good the next 2 weeks. They're advertising quite a bit ahead of time. We'll probably get into that as the show progresses. I mentioned that you can participate in the show by email or phone call. If you're live streaming our show, thanks for joining our live stream, and you are invited to email or call into the show. If you are not live streaming and you're hearing this on demand after the fact, you are invited to live stream the show. You can find a link to the live stream on our Twitter feed at PWTorch. And you can also look for the link in my TV reports at pwtorch.com. And you can just go to wadekellerpostshow.com and look for the link to the live show. So lots of ways to find us. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we're live here on this feed after the Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown programs. Tuesday nights, Kelly Wells is usually hosting with a variety of the NXT crew a live post-show after NXT, which takes on perhaps new relevance with the 2.0 being dropped and the logo going back to black and gold, but using the same font. And so maybe some signs of some changes or just renewed interest, or Paul Levesque just wanting to go back to colors he likes instead of that kind of hip-hop, street art, multicolor spray paint thing that they had going for this last year. But whatever, check that show out too. You can find a link to the live stream in our NXT TV report on Tuesday nights at pwtorch.com. Either Bruce Hazelwood or Kelly Wells are writing that report. They rotate every other week with their live coverage of NXT on Tuesday nights. And so you're definitely invited to call that show and participate in the live stream. If you want to download that show, by the way, that's on our third podcast feed, the PW Torch Daily Cast feed. That's also free, different show every day of the week. And you can subscribe to that for free by entering PW Torch on your podcast app. And you'll see the PW Torch Daily Cast logo pop up. Just subscribe to that for free. And by the way, Saturdays now include a new free podcast. Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure has been VIP exclusive for a long time, and it is a popular show, a destination weekend listen covering WWE. They focus on WWE. So we finally have a WWE-focused show on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup, and you absolutely want to check this out. Nick and Tom are fantastic together. They I don't know, Tyler. How would you describe their dynamic?
I'd say they're both opinionated, and not always in the same way, but they're both very passionate about WWE in ways that I, in one way, am not. And I think that's a benefit for me as someone who can also be very similar in my passions. It's good to hear an opposite opinion. So if that is as politically good, I mean, their show's really good, and they are. Yeah. I mean, I'd say, like, from a personal experience, like, Zach and I are a little more are cordial with each other and kind of agree, just like you and I do.
Yes.
But, you know, there's some good combativeness. I would say if people have listened to you and Todd, I think Tom and Nick have a similar dynamic, but in a different way. So that's my piece.
Yeah, they're non-cordial. That'd be one word description. I would say that I'll say that Nick Barbati can come across as a bit of a know-it-all. And Tom Colohue does know it all. Like, his knowledge is great. Like, his WWE on-call all history. And I'm not saying Nick is wrong, but he comes across as if, you know, he's quite sure he knows it all. It's a bit of a caricature. But I'm also trying to just get them to fire back at me on their show coming up this Saturday if they are listening or hear about this. It is Dynamite, so they probably won't know anything that we're saying here because they're so WWE-focused. They're not paying attention to our AEW post shows. But seriously, check it out. Really fun dynamic between those two. And it is free. It's been VIP exclusive for a long time, and we're excited to bring it to people. VIP members, by the way, will still almost always get the show probably 10 hours earlier than everyone else. It'll be up early Saturday afternoons. So there's still a benefit to be a VIP member. And they may even do a VIP after show every once in a while as a perk. But the show will be available Saturday nights for free on the Daily Cast lineup. So check that out. Search PW Torch and grab on. There's a different show every day of the week. I'm not going to plug all the shows here, but some really good stuff in that lineup. We've got to freshen up our commercial for the Daily Cast lineup now that we're in our new fall season with that change. Speaking of non-cordial, Kelly Wells on the NXT post show last night, just outright calling Bruce Hazelwood and Nate Lindberg dumb for comparing the NXT colors to Nickelodeon. I was so cheering him on that one, this notion that NXT went to Nickelodeon colors, when Nickelodeon never had multicolors. If you Google hip-hop street art, you see exactly the color scheme that NXT was going for, and everyone's just like, wow, it's Nickelodeon. So I'm just so happy Kelly was just like, I wouldn't call Bruce and Nate dumb. Like, I wouldn't do that. But I wouldn't say that I was disagreeing that opinion was dumb. And I was so happy that Kelly was so unapologetically blunt about it. So anyway, but I would never be that way. But I can still smile when someone else says what I think. Anyway, hi, Bruce. Hi, Nate. All right. Let's get to phone calls and emails. You can give us a call right now, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. We're low on calls, so jump on in. Push one if you've already called in, or give us a call. The wait won't be long tonight. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Like I said, we're expecting on-site correspondent Matt to be calling us in a bit here too. Okay, so let's go first to, I think this is Ian in Tennessee. Is this you?
Hey, Wade, how you doing, man?
Good. How many days has it been since we talked?
Don't ask me that question. I feel bad for the answer.
You're one of the people who I was like, what happened to Ian?
I mean, there was just something about this episode that I was like, all right, I got to talk to my buddy Wade about this episode, man.
Cool. Awesome.
So,
well, let's talk about it.
Good
to hear from you.
Yeah. You guys were talking about the tournament. I wasn't shocked with Jericho losing, but I just have this weird feeling that they're not done with Jericho and Danielson and this whole Daniel Garcia storyline coming up.
In what way? I'm sure we're seeing. We're heading towards Garcia teaming with Danielson, and it was interesting. And we didn't talk about the cutaway to Garcia after the match, but Garcia. Did you read into Tyler what Garcia's reaction was to the finish? Was it, you know, was it satisfied with the outcome, or was he being kind of neutral? What was your take on that?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I would say with the Jamie Hayter portion of this tonight, it's all kind of confusing on some of these characters' demeanors. And I think Garcia is kind of in a similar boat that Hayter was. That's why I bring that up. But, yeah, I would say neutral toward, you know, it seemed like he still was like 60% Jericho, 40% Danielson based on that reaction. Like he, you know, like if you're watching a neutral NFL game, you're not a fan of either team and you kind of decide that you're rooting for someone near in the third quarter. That's kind of what Garcia felt like to me, but he was not totally distraught either. It's kind of the vibe I got. But again, some character work here on the show has been a little confusing with you know, people that are maybe going from heel to face. So I think he might fit in that boat as well.
I'm really excited, Ian, for Garcia and Danielson to just be a team and just be a great team for like 2 years. Like if Danielson like doesn't even work singles. Oh, yeah, he's old enough. I don't know if we want to go 2 years with him not working singles. But, like, I want Danielson and Garcia to become a legendary, awesome tag team and launch Garcia into singles stardom. Obviously, sprinkle in singles matches with them. That's what they're going to do. And they probably won't complain like Dax and Cash are if that happens. Well, actually, the ratio of Dax and Cash actually teaming together is pretty low. So I get why they're complaining. But, yeah, I want to see them be a great tag team of the year in 2023. There's still time for them to make a case late this year. And then, you know, Jericho can team with Sammy Guevara, for instance, or Jake Hager and feud with them. And to me, that seems where it's headed. What do you think, Ian?
I mean, yeah, that's the way I keep thinking because I was, like, hearing reviews of people saying, you know, Garcia is like a long-lost puppy trying to figure out, like, what he wants to do. Does he want to be with his idol Danielson or does he want to stay with Jericho and the Appreciation Society? But I personally think Garcia would join the Blackpool Combat Club, maybe. I mean, that might be a long shot, but that's a good way to keep Danielson with Combat Club and have Garcia team with Danielson.
Tyler, do you think they've been downplaying the Blackpool Combat Club at all? I mean, I know the crowd is chanting, you know, the letters and they're, you know, William Regal is acknowledging it by his presence, but it's been less of a faction. And I don't know. I mean, you can either agree or disagree with my premise there, but also if you agree, is it just because of circumstances with everything going on and needing Moxley to be in the world title picture while Danielson's doing his thing with Garcia, it just hasn't been as prominent to have them just hanging out together in the ring?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. I think when I think Blackpool Combat Club on September 14th, 2022, it's Claudio and it's Wheeler and it's William Regal are who I think of. And, you know, I see Moxley and Danielson as sort of friends of Blackpool Combat Club, but not official members at this point because they're not interacting in that way. And I think, like you had mentioned there, the world title and for Moxley and obviously with Danielson now seemed to supersede any sort of factional ties to, you know, to bolster the importance of the title in this tournament. I think that's why Garcia was not involved in storyline with the decision of this match tonight, and he might at a later date. So that all is just the belt is superseding everything here. But when this is over, I don't really see them. And we'll see what happens in their match next week. I think that'll determine a lot. But I don't see Blackpool Combat Club being all of those guys. And I would see Danielson and Garcia being their own unit. And they're, you know, friendly with Claudio and Wheeler. And Regal might do their commentary, but I just don't think they'll be proper Blackpool Combat Club is the way I'm reading it now.
Yeah, yeah. Ian, back to you. Oh, I muted you. Sorry, Ian. It's hard to go back. It's hard to talk on the show.
Sorry, you're good.
Back to you, Ian. Go ahead.
You had said something about heel Daniel Bryan, but, like, anytime he comes out, I just hear the crowd erupt for him. But, like, I keep – he gives me, like, face vibes, like baby face vibes in a way.
Who does?
Danielson, Bryan Danielson.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Yeah, Daniel – isn't – I mean, but Danielson's a face.
He jumped, but he's coming out of the heel entrance. And
just ignore that. Just ignore that.
That's what my friends are like. Just ignore that. They don't know what he's like a tweener sometimes, you know. But my other thing was, I'm not hating on Swerve and Our Glory, but that seemed like a waste of a match with the Lucha Bros tonight. Because, like, Lucha Bros, you know, they have a big momentum winning the Trios titles last week. And then they lose to Swerve and Our Glory, who's most likely going to lose to the Acclaimed next week.
That's a really good topic, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I was a bit torn on that. Because I can't sit here and be critical of Paul Levesque on his last several shows, doing one cop-out finish after another, when it's like, you know, big names against each other. You know, Solo Sikoa causing Drew to lose to Roman, and Braun interrupting a tag team contendership four-way. And it's like not even a big deal with the high stakes that the match was just ignored because Braun just destroyed everybody, including Montez Ford. And then you had the nonsense on Friday on SmackDown that I ranted about. It's like, just do a finish. Stop doing non-finishes. Just be a brave booker. Is sort of my word of the month right now. I just want to see brave booking. Just have good, like, it's NFL season, you know, good teams beat good teams. And it happens. It's part of sports. And a wrestling company can not only survive, but thrive if big names beat big names. Now, also, and I will not say the dumb team name. I banned that from my vocabulary, but Strickland and Keith Lee, as I will call them. It's like the Santana Ortiz name, I won't say. They need to get some momentum on Dynamite. You know, they don't feel like a premier tag team. They haven't been presented on Dynamite. No offense, Tyler, but if you're just sort of hanging out on Rampage, the message sent is it's not an A act that Tony believes in as much. You know, it's not universally true, but I think that's more true than not. And it just feels like they've been sort of like the Rampage taking champions, and they need to get them a big win. And they also just need to have a good match. But it did feel like a bit of a throwaway. Like, since when are the Lucha Brothers stepping stones in a sort of throwaway impromptu tag team match for the Acclaimed? Like, that feels weird and backwards, but Tony Khan loves the Acclaimed. He's among the people who Anthony Bowen says is everybody, you know, who loves the Acclaimed. Everybody loves the Acclaimed. That includes Tony Khan. And it's Tony's creation. He put those two together and he believes in them. And they got this crazy good reaction in Chicago. And they can talk. And Max Caster is a star in the making, or a star already. He's in his 30s. And he owns the mic. He owns the camera. He's comfortable with his own skin. Push that guy. And Bowens is just so good in the ring, you know, just so rock solid. And so, I mean, right now, and people are going to, like, some people will be really mad, but, I mean, I would take the Acclaimed over the Lucha Bros right now if I'm Tony Khan and I had to choose who on my roster right now. I mean, maybe if you go back a year, that's not the call. And maybe if you say, well, what about 2 years worth of them? Will the Acclaimed kind of burn out, or will they split up and the Lucha Brothers are just going to be reliable for great athleticism and you know, strong TV and pay-per-view matches? Sure, you can have that argument. But right now, I don't know that it's a wrong call to try to get Swerve and Lee over by beating a big team. I guess my only pushback would be make a bigger deal out of the fact that it happened. You know, frame it as build a match up better, not just with a quick you know, quick little Lucha Brothers promo with Alex backstage. But, you know, build a match up, treat it like a bigger deal, and tell a story that this could be the end of the line for Strickland and Lee, because Lucha Brothers are so established. And so when the win happened, it meant more. I just don't think they got as much out of the Lucha Brothers losing as they could have and should have. So those are some of my thoughts, Ian. Tyler, I want to hear yours.
Yeah, I like I said at the top, I think I liked it more than both of you. I mean, you seemed to like it well enough.
I said there were highs and lows. Yeah. I don't think the match was a low. I thought it was fine. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But just like to me, I guess the big picture of things I saw watching this was this felt like a last hurrah for Strickland and Lee as tag team champions. And they probably have had the same complaints that you've had of them being the Rampage tag champions. It has felt like being the second tag team on the roster, and they're the, you know, quote unquote AEW tag team champion. So this is like a mea culpa from Tony to get them a spot. But, you know, and then when it comes to the Lucha Bros, they, to me, I mean, and I don't necessarily, I wouldn't book them this way, but they, to me, feel like the Darby Allin of the tag team division, where they always have a great match. They're beloved by the fan base, but they seem to lose more than they win. And, you know, I think we'll see that potentially on Rampage this week to build up other people that maybe need a little bit of a refresher, and Darby fits that boat right now. So that all, you know, is what it is. And, yeah, I mean, it feels like the Acclaimed are going to get a big win over a team that is, you know, kind of microwaved up here on TV. And they're going to go on a run and, you know, hopefully a change in the booking of the tag titles, because – Jurassic Express were booked almost entirely the same as Strickland and Lee being, you know, the main eventing Rampage more often than not, and then occasionally having moments on Dynamite, but hopefully that changes. But, you know, there's 10,000 tag titles, and I think the All-Atlantic title got more mentions than almost any belt tonight, which is probably a problem in my mind, too. But
yeah, yeah. All right, Ian, back to you for any follow-up on that, or you can bring up a different topic if you'd like.
He mentioned all the other tag titles, and I heard a rumor that FTR was rumored to win basically all the title belts at All Out before everybody found out Kenny Omega was supposed to come back. Now, I personally could see FTR versus Zeke Lane or someone else at Full Gear and have FTR hold all the belts, because honestly, they're the best tag team in professional wrestling, in my personal opinion. I feel like FTR is criminally underused right now.
What do you think about that, Tyler? FTR against the Acclaimed. Does that work if the Acclaimed are baby faces against FTR, who are baby faces? Does that even matter? Am I wrong in that? And that's how they're cast right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think Khan has booked himself into a corner here with the. It seems if you have, you know, if the Acclaimed win, it's going to be a huge moment. You know, probably the second biggest moment of the night in Arthur Ashe Stadium behind, you know, Moxley presumably winning the title. And, you know, to then in a couple of weeks have them lose to FTR seems like, you know, kind of holding them back for what could be potentially, as you laid out, you know, kind of the first homegrown AEW tag team to really start from nothing and get to the top of the mountain. And, you know, but that also with FTR, they have been, you know, not on TV very much, and they feel, you know, I think no one would argue that they probably should be AEW tag team champions at the same time. So I would lean more towards not having them, you know, not have FTR and Acclaimed meet, because it's kind of a lose-lose depending on how you look at it. And, you know, I haven't seen a ton of reporting on this, but I don't know. There must be some reason why they're not on all the time. And I don't have any facts on that, so I don't want to get into that, but you know, if you're Tony right now and the Acclaimed are easier to work with, if I can speculate, then I think that goes a long way to having them be your tag champions. So
my kind of pitch for what AEW should do the last couple of weeks with everything going on is just Tony picking out people who are going to make showing up to his job pleasant, and not to the degree where you're pushing inferior talent, but like, you know, Ty goes to the non non-drama right now, like someone who's not causing drama. I think AEW has its fill of drama, and they just have a ton of wrestlers, and Tony just keeps kind of rotating people in and out and in and out, and it's like everybody can't have equal playing time. It's like head coaches have to make tough calls. In the NBA and NHL, there's some good players who don't get much ice time. In the NBA, there's some players deep in the bench who are there. If somebody goes down with an injury, they're going to help you win. but you can't split the minutes equally among all 12 people. It's just that you can't do that. You've got to pick your starters. You've got to pick the top minute, the people who get the most minutes from the bench, and you can't go too deep or else nobody gets enough time. And I just think he's had a deep bench, and he's felt pressure to push a lot of different people, and he spread the minutes out too thin. So at this point, and I'm not saying every choice he makes is going to be fair or in that some of the drama isn't on him, and it would be unfair to punish the wrestlers for it, because I'm sure that, you know, I suspect he would even admit that's the case in some situations. But go with the people you believe in, who you can show up and just get through the shows and not have drama outside of the ring, on social media and that kind of thing. FTR, though, are so good, and they're so over, and it's such a shame that, you know, they're not just one of the first five, six acts you think of when you think of AEW right now. And you tune in, and you just have a really good chance to see them do something, because they had that kind of momentum. But that said, the Acclaimed are, as we said, Tony's guys, and they're over, and they can work. You know, it's sort of, it's not now or never, but they're both in their 30s. I think that's correct, right, Tyler?
I think so. Bowens might be like late 20s, but I can fact check that while you're talking.
But Max Caster is 33, and what is Anthony Bowens? He's 31. So yeah, he was late 20s when AEW started, when the team formed. But so they're both in their early 30s. This isn't like some you know Dante Martin Hook project. Like, just it's time to go with them. You know, so go with them, and they're ready and they're good. So yeah, make some choices, maybe some tough choices. But make those choices and make AEW, make it about 6 tag teams, about 14 singles men, and about 8 singles women. And just make that your core. And part of the decision of who to push right now is, one, do they reach a certain bar where they're good and they're over? But also, are they happy? Are they causing trouble or not? You know, I just think Tony's show up and focus on booking and getting people over. And have a stretch of time without drama and not even take a chance on that. I just think there's people in that company who are valuable, who just want to get to selling tickets and cutting promos and wrestling matches. And anyway, that's what I have to say on that. Ian, back to you for any closing words.
Last thing is, I don't know if you guys saw the Sammy Guevara promo he did for Road to the Show or on his vlog, but like, he's just giving me future star vibes, and I just hate what they're doing with him right now. Because I oddly thought he had a slither of a chance to beat Moxley and have like the biggest upset. But like, where do you see them go with Sammy Guevara now that he beat Darby and then he loses to Moxley?
What's the state of Sammy Guevara, Tyler?
Yeah, so I think this match was a good visualization of where I am with him as well, because I was pleasantly surprised by, you know, his psychology, him, you know, toning it down a little bit and, you know, thinking about the match itself and not just hitting spots and all that. And I was in a good place mentally with him. I was enjoying the match. And then as soon as Ty Mello came out, it all kind of came crashing to a head. And I was like, oh, this is the guy that, you know, then you know he's going to lose and all that stuff. So I think that's a good representation of, like, the future of what Sammy Guevara could be. And, you know, the thing that is troubling to me, and I think Tony Khan would have similar thoughts, is, right, you know, he finished the 2021 Double or Nothing. He got the win in the main event, and was kind of, you know, it was his moment, and he was going to go on, and then you know, we've had what we've had since. So, you know, not to say it's impossible for him to ever become a top guy in the company, but I think he's, you know, a top 8 guy potentially, but I don't know if he can ever be that top guy. And, you know, what I saw tonight was positive, until all the things surrounding him that, you know, I and pretty much everyone else hasn't liked about his character for the longest time. You know, so him being solo, I think, is important. And, you know, him getting away from a group whenever that does happen and doing that one more time, being solo and being truly solo and seeing how that goes, is going to be a huge litmus test for him.
Yeah. And, you know, he's 29 years old. He's not, you know, again, he's not one of those 23, 24, let's, you know, let him mature. Let's, you know, see what he's going to become. It's like, now's kind of the time to decide what he's going to be and go with it. And I mean, I think he's in a good spot. And, you know, Jericho's obviously, you know, getting older for a active pro wrestler. And if it's Jericho and Sammy against Garcia and Danielson in a match that culminates in a pay-per-view and is one of the top tag team feuds of the year for AEW, I'm cool with that. You know, it doesn't have to be for the titles, but it can be. And so I think that's a good role for Sammy. And, you know, he's had a run with a singles belt, but I don't think he, like, shined a lot. And there was just some other things going on at that point in his personal life and social media distractions and stuff. But I would think, you know, 9 months from now, after a good tag run, again, you can do Jericho and Hager too, but I think Sammy's more available and a better choice to help carry the matches. Just go with that. And then try again, you know, maybe next summer or next spring with Sammy in a singles run. But you know, kind of evaluate things between now and then. Ian, I appreciate the call. Am I going to hear from you, you know, relatively soon? Might you call in again?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll be calling you every week now, my friend.
Awesome. Cool. Good to hear you. Good to hear from you again. I hear you in the archives. I'm like, come on, Ian. We got to hear from you more.
I got you. All right, thanks. I'm not going to ghost you anymore, buddy.
Sweet. All right. Glad things are going well. Talk to you soon.
See you guys.
Yep, take care. All right, give us a call, 347-215-8558. We've got a lot of people called into the show. Nobody else right now has flagged themselves by pushing one, which is rare, which also means if you push one, you can be like on the show right away and join the conversation. So feel invited to do that. In the meantime, I want to jump to an email. First one is Zach in Texas. He says, I think Tony Khan has done a great reset for AEW in the wake of the CM Punk-caused controversy. We know what side he's on. Not to sound too much like Todd Martin, but centering everything around championships and championship aspirations, as Stokely did with a firm, strengthens everything. It also accentuates the personal feuds. Maybe CM Punk leaving was just what AEW needed for a refresh. So I want to talk about Stokely and the firm because that took up like 2/3 of the show. Maybe am I wrong on that? Was the promo about an hour, 10 minutes?
I think mentally it did, but maybe not in real time.
So we'll get to that. But what about subtracting CM Punk? Is that what AEW needed for a refresh? And I know people have their image of who, you know, CM Punk / Phil Brooks is, and, you know, actually mostly what, you know, CM Punk characters and what they hoped for him. And he came back as the, shucks, I'm just happy to be back. And I don't know if I'm any good anymore, but boy, am I happy. I'm in a happy place. This is so much better than where I used to be. That was sort of the character. And I'm going to ease my way in and see if I've still got it. And then, you know, somebody just said, you know, can he get along with anybody anywhere for any length of time? And I think some people who were on Punk's side in WWE, even though I think both sides of that whole equation had, you know, there's blame to go around in terms of what went wrong there. But I think some people are looking at this going, really? That's how you take that kind of laundry public in that way while, you know, being disrespectful towards your boss and calling out EVPs in a way and then using the Colt Cabana thing in that context to launch all these grievances that you have. And while that's going on, or as you lead into it, you think you've got a gotcha moment with a reporter and it turns out you're just wrong in your premise. Like, it wasn't a good look. And I mean, obviously there's still people on Punk's side of this whole thing, including the fan holding up a sign that said CM Punk owns the Bucks in the front row, held up prominently to the chagrin of the, you know, three rows behind him on and on during that main event. But, you know, I think some people are questioning whether Punk is just, you know, mentally the locker room leader that he fancies himself or aspires to be, or whatever phrase you want to use based on how all that went down. And so I guess I say all that, and, you know, with Zach going, you know, CM Punk caused a controversy and him being gone is what AEW needed. I mean, it does bring up the topic, did Punk end up morphing into something that didn't fit the spirit of what fans really want AEW to be? And is there going to be some relief now that they've seen this side of Punk? And granted, he had to be emotionally distressed over the injury and the possibility he'd be out again and just feeling maybe injury prone, or that he's letting down Tony Khan and the fans. And that can take you to a place where, you know, you let loose and maybe use some bad judgment or go further than you at least would have intended. But nevertheless, I mean, Moxley seems to be sort of the guy who came out and said, let's just, you know, be the cleanser of all this bad, all the bad vibes, and let's get back to just loving what we do and doing it well. And there might be a sense among some fans who even like Punk at one point going, yeah, maybe things are better with the crew that they have now, minus Punk, and for that matter, you know, to a degree, Kenny and the Bucks too. So Tyler, all that said, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this is such a complicated answer in so many ways, right? I mean, this is,
yeah.
if you're black and white in this, I mean, you just don't understand the situation, I would say. And I'm not saying that's what Zach is. I think Zach was pro-Punk initially. I mean, Zach's been a great viewer on the YouTube, so I want to shout him out for that. But I kind of saw his journey in the comments there from kind of defending him to now being where he is now. So
yeah,
you know,
and
that's not to call it Zach, just kind of tell everyone his journey to get to this point. And please, Zach, let me know if I'm mistaken there. But, you know, I think if you're looking at let's say the Saturday before All Out, like if someone were to say like, oh, this company, Punk needs to get out of here, you know, you would call them crazy, right? I mean, he's the biggest star on the roster. He had not even gotten a chance to have a run at the top of the card to potentially increase viewership and create a buzz for the company and all that sort of stuff. So if you take that, it's obvious that, you know, the answer is not to get rid of CM Punk, even if there was maybe some rumblings that he's not super happy, because that, I would think, was part of the equation when you brought him in, if I'm running a company. But, you know, post the scrum, I mean, you know, there's lots to go here, but it seems, it kind of brought out the worst in a group of people backstage from what we can gather. And, you know, this past week of AEW, if I'm an AEW fan of the television product and I'm not, you know, living and dying by every news article that's coming out, like, you know, like we all are, I prefer this sort of style where, like you said, we've chosen some people, we're running with them, we have people who feel like they're, you know, part of AEW and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, that comes into the fact too, like, this version of AEW saw tonight, I don't think is in the next 5-10 years has any chance to even be close to what WWE is doing from a viewership and notoriety level. And if that matters to you, I'd say it's a big negative. If it doesn't and you like what you're watching and if it can maintain its current level, I think you're pretty happy. So it just depends, like, you know, you as a fan, you know, let's say me as a fan, not as an analyst of all this, like, I've enjoyed AEW from the start. I don't necessarily want it to be the number one company in the world and kind of morph into what WWE had become. So this past, you know, since this the altercation, I'm happy, and it feels like it's kind of going back to basics as opposed to morphing into the, you know, are you Punk and FTR or are you the original guys, you know, talking about Cody all the time, all that sort of stuff. Like, I dislike talking about all that backstage stuff and not focusing on the wrestling. So, you know, for me it works, but I think if you're Tony Khan, if you're someone who wants AEW to get bigger and get viewed by more people and be more culturally relevant, I think this has been a negative, and Punk being not there is a negative. So, but, you know, it's that is not to say, like, I'm positive, I'm pro what he did, and I would not have him on my show if he did that to me and I'm his boss. So, but, you know, I've made that pretty clear, I would say, on the YouTube, at least.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So, Stokely Hathaway and the Firm. So we had MJF come out first, and MJF's always, like, good to great on the microphone. I thought this was good. And I say it was good because there were some things that were very good, but it was a little offset. I thought he leaned a little heavily on insulting the crowd, and I understand why. Crowd's cheering him, and so he's trying to go really hard on them to stop that in its tracks. They've chosen a direction for him, and it is not imminent babyface turn. Whatever they've been doing with them, they don't want another Cody Rhodes situation where the crowd just hijacks the intent of the character. So he's leaning in hard, and, I mean, you can comment if you think it's going to work or not, or people are just going to defiantly cheer him. Also, I thought he talked too fast and just felt like there's no, we can't have any even slight pause or break or cadence to anything, in part because I think he just wanted to plow through the promo and get the crowd to boo him. But also, and this has been my consistent criticism of him, and he's done some of the, I shouldn't have to, like, qualify any criticism with gushing praise, but he deserves it. Like, he's been so good at times, more often than not, really, really good. But that yelling at the top of his lungs and overmodulating, it's unbecoming. It doesn't serve him well. It's not effective. He's better when he can lose control, but don't lose control by shouting at the top of your lungs into a microphone and overmodulating it. It's just unpleasant. It takes me out of the mood that he sets. So, but he keeps doing it. So, you know, he must believe in it, or he just gets wrapped up in the moment and he beats himself up afterwards. I don't know which it is, but I there was more of that tonight. The idea of bringing up Moxley's alcohol treatment and saying, you know, you slay that demon, but I'm going to be a demon you can't slay, or whatever he said. I mean, that's fine. You know, it's Moxley, MJF territory to go into someone's personal life and pick at that scab. And that's what he did. So I want to get your thoughts on MJF first, but that then transitioned into him explaining the Stokely Hathaway alliance. And then Stokely talked for a really long time after that. So Tyler, your thoughts on MJF, and you can go into the Stokely thing too, and then I'll respond.
Yeah, I'm in line with you on modulation and that sort of thing. I mean, I probably liked it a little less than you did based on what you described there. And I'm also a huge fan of MJF. I think that he can almost do no wrong with this character. But, I mean, due to circumstance, I mean, the crowd, at least in Albany, New York, and, you know, I guess if when we get the caller on, I'm curious, you know, is Albany, New York more – is it more Chicago, Illinois, or is it more Corpus Christi, Texas? You know, I'm curious on the level of smartness of that crowd, because I certainly think if they're doing that in Albany, it's going to be that case in Arthur Ashe where you have a more hardcore fan base. That's essentially AEW's Madison Square Garden at this point. So, you know, if you want to take that old McMahon thing of whatever they decide is kind of the way you got to go. But this was the first promo that I kind of felt MJF was not in control in the entire run of an AEW. And, you know, not to say that he was totally not in control, but you could tell him leaning heavy, like you said, on the insults and going back when, you know, I don't think he would have done it seven times or however many times he did it if he thought it was working, right? He was just throwing the kitchen sink to get booed, and it never really worked. And I'm sure he's very frustrated by that currently and thinking what he can do to get that heel heat. But, you know, the crowd, as much as MJF kind of ruined the segment, and I'm not, you know, saying anyone can't boo or cheer, but it fell flat because it was almost comical for me. Like, you know, he's trying to get stuff over and it's like he's at an open mic and people are just, you know, heckling him is kind of what I felt like. And I think he had the same sort of frustration and beat red face that I would have in that situation. But, you know, all that being said, I don't think it's a total lost cause because Moxley is the perfect option right now. Yes. Baby faces to get him over as a heel. So I don't think it's a terrible thing, but yeah, then we can, you can talk about Stokely. I think that's kind of where we're going next. So, but that was, I would say that was clunky. Him explaining that is, it was my big takeaway as well.
Yeah. I will say when MJF's coming out and he's getting a big pop and the goal is for him to be booed because they're setting up MJF Moxley, presumably, don't cut to a close up of some women standing, in the front row cheering and smiling like, you know, Elvis is walking out and they can't wait to see him. Like, choose your camera shots better. Like, you have total control over that. You got to find someone in the crowd who's booing or sitting stoically. Like, don't, I just like, there's decisions that are sometimes made and in terms of the camera shots they go to. And I'm just like, there's got to be better communication. And the director's got to just know that's a bad call. Why? Don't lean into it and don't make it seem like you're endorsing it. When, I mean, if I'm MJF and I see that director shot, I you know, I don't yell and scream at him, but I like express, hey, I'm trying to get heel heat here, and people in New York City next week, you know, it's going to be a challenge. You know, I'm not going to be not too far from Long Island. You know, don't show cheering fans smiling when I come out. You know, that's totally the opposite of what we're going for here. By the way, before I get to Stokely, what do you think has gone wrong, like with MJF and where this is happening? I mean, and what's your kind of take on his return and whether it seems like it's a master plan being executed with an unexpected response, or it wasn't a master plan and therefore we're seeing the consequences of whatever didn't work in all of that, you know, scheme to go all meta and all Pillman, we're going to work everybody and no one's going to know and it's going to be legendary. And then, you know, he gets jobbed, gets decisively by Wardlow after he'd been protected for so long. And then he cuts this weird promo that basically turns him babyface and turns Tony Khan heel. And then it's like a Punk feud set up, and now Punk is gone. It's just like, I mean, it's obviously not a master plan. It's a, it's been a mess. But I guess I just answered my own question in terms of what went wrong. But your take on you know what they can do differently to recover from this, and if there's a step they could have taken different in the last few weeks, also or last week or so.
Correct. I mean, just to backtrack a little bit, to agree with you, I think if this is all master plan and you essentially, you know, ruined Wardlow's character to a certain extent and the way that match at the pay-per-view went where MJF just laid down for him, shows that if it was master plan, then whoever came up with that should not be trusted with any sort of long-term booking ever. But, and then I think the fatal flaw with this whole character, the promo you mentioned before he disappeared, because yeah, he went babyface, and that coinciding with him coming back and then all the dysfunction of your management staff, your Tony Khan, you know, manifesting itself in the brawl backstage. If you're an online fan, you know, let's say half the AEW audience and probably a majority, you know, half that crowd, you know, how could you kind of not agree with that character in that promo of kind of what is wrong with the company? But yeah, so all that being said, I think your actual question was, what can they do to make it better? Right. Is that what you were chewing me up for? Sorry.
Yeah.
I got some thoughts. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said earlier, Moxley, you know, winning a hard-fought match, shaking the hand of Bryan Danielson, having a, you know, 4.5-star match that they just work really hard. It's really psychologically sound. It's a Steamboat Flair in the 80s type match. And, you know, him being the, you know, the savior of AEW, essentially, as the character he's listed. And then, you know, probably need one more garnish on top that I can't think of off the top of my head, but... MJF then, you know, coming in and you know, coming after that and, you know, I don't know if ruining that title match for him, because that would be odd if you know, he screwed him out and Danielson won the match and then, you know, that doesn't really work. So, yeah, just I think him having a big-time program with Jon Moxley is really the only thing you can do here, and not making Moxley do, you know, five things to get the match, because Moxley's going to be like... you know, I would set up something where, you know, how MJF usually does, hey, you need to do these five things to earn a match against me at the pay-per-view. I would have him lay that promo out and have Jon Moxley like be like, yeah, I'm not doing that. If you want to title,
exactly,
a piece of paper. And then that'll get Moxley super cheered and everyone will, you know, MJF will look like a buffoon and people will laugh at him. And, you know, something like that is a good way to transition into that. And if they go to Long Island at any point before the pay-per-view, I would have MJF say like, yeah, I'm not going, you know, I'm tired of being here. I live here now. And he just cannot be on that show. If they do that, then it's just shows no sign of learning anything about him as a heel character.
So as far as Stokely Hathaway goes, do we have any better idea of what happened at All Out with MJF and Stokely other than MJF is not in the faction? So it to me, it felt like somebody trying to talk themselves out of a situation by talking and talking and talking when it would have been better to just not address it, which is all these things he had been doing up until establishing the firm. And it's like, well, I was just was he like swerving people or like he tried to explain why all that stuff you saw didn't matter. But what matters now is the firm. And then he went. And so he's giving his biography. I'm not a manager that you think I am. I'm going to surprise you people with some facts now. It's like, you're not going to surprise anybody. Nobody knows who you are yet. You know, you're highly touted, but so far, honestly, kind of highly overrated in terms of what he's delivered so far. So this is going to be like the big statement promo. I'm going to cut a promo, get to the back, get a standing ovation, new top manager. And it wasn't that. And he's like, Morrissey, and he's talking to Morrissey, and Morrissey looked at him like, just get out of my face. Like, I don't know if that was or if he's trying to be like just, you know, badass who doesn't react. I don't know what he's going for, but it came across to me like Morrissey's like, I can't believe I'm managed by this guy. And then he's got, you know, the gun boys who are, you know, dark wrestlers who were in this silly feud, and now they're not, and, you know, they're better than a lot of people give them credit for, but it doesn't do anything but scream mid-card for this new faction. And it seems like a really weird fit with Stokely. And then Ethan Page, who just should be on his own, or I don't know. This is not an upgrade for him. And Lee Moriarty is just like, okay, well, why do we care? I don't know. I didn't like the segment. I didn't think Stokely was good. I didn't think he had an economy of words. I still don't know what his character is. I don't think he still does. And it's a weird faction with no cohesion. And it was, I thought, probably the low point of the show. Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree. Low point of the show, for sure. Very confusing. It was a, kind of a show killer, if you will, of, like, good momentum into that. Kind of hurt the, for a long, long time on the show, made it feel kind of odd. There's a lot of tropes in wrestling factions that are tried and true. And I think there's a reason that is not deviated from a lot. And I think this is a good example of that tonight. And I would not be surprised if there's a cleanup job on what this group is. And that might be some of the, ambiguous words that Stokely used might be used in the future to kind of clean it up. But, saying that you're on retainer for MJF. So you are, paid per job, your contractors for MJF essentially, does not make anyone look very good. Right. I mean, you always have a leader of a faction, but there's a guy who's above you and not in the faction, but you're beholden to him, which is never a good sign for a wrestling character. And then also the statement of, if we're not basically working for MJF, we're all doing our own thing. It's very confusing. That was like that. That's like a screeching tire sound. Like, what? Hold on. But they're all staying there together. So that's very interesting. And then the moment between him and Morrissey where he's like, "I love you," and he didn't say it. He's like, "Come on, I love you. Say it back." Like, that was, I don't know if that was like him trying to just get like internet points or something to be, on something and get a laugh out of Morrissey on live TV. That's kind of what that felt like more than anything. So it doesn't feel, very, very main event. And, And then I agree with Ethan Page. I just felt bad for him, through this because, he did, I think Ethan Page is really good. I think he's one of the best talkers on the roster. I think he's underrated in the ring as well. I don't think he needs to be, TNT champion, but I think him being used not with American Top Team and not as a guy who's chasing the All-Atlantic title in a group like this, and he's the main guy, is just like it's pretty rough. So I feel bad for him after all this, but again, maybe we'll see this group get kind of a refresh down the line, but the way it's constructed just doesn't feel important. And I'm curious how it affects Jade. If Stokely's still hanging around with her, does that affect her, make her feel less than? I think is an important thing to look for in the future as well.
Yeah. I can't remember who I was talking to in AEW, but a couple weeks ago. I think it was before all this controversy, actually. But I can't remember who it was who I was talking to, but they just said that Stokely kind of has a rep for, like, his promos being about getting himself over and not getting over who he's with. So that's just something to keep an eye on. Is that a problem? Does he need to be produced differently? Is that the approach he takes, but he doesn't realize it? Or does he think, hey, if I get myself over, then my people are over? But his reputation, at least in one part of that locker room, is Stokely's out for himself on his promos, and he doesn't have the art. And it's not necessarily like nefarious or selfish as much as it might just be his instinct. It might be, he just needs to be kind of steered in a different direction. But the feeling is that his promos, a manager can get themselves over, but you should also be getting over your talent. And so I was watching this promo, especially when he turned to talk about his wrestlers, like, okay, now let's see if he can get other people over. And I don't know. I mean, I think that was him trying. but yeah, it was there. Anyway, I don't want to belabor the point, but it was long and it was a mess. It wasn't cohesive, and I didn't really take a major point away from it. I'm glad they addressed it, even if it was a bit of a mess, just because it's weird not to. And I assume, they wanted MJF to not pull the chip down and have him do it in some cheap way, because if he was outsmarted everybody and pulled the chip down, maybe he'd get cheered. So what, how lame is it that he just had someone else pull it down for him? But to me, it's one of the worst pay-per-view match finishes of all time, because it just made a mockery of everything. It was just it wasn't good. So, all right. So anyway, we'll end our just ripping it apart Stokely there. I think there's some talent there, and I think his reputation precedes him for a reason. But boy, it needs some focus and some guidance. And I said I'm done ripping on, but I'm not sure the firm is salvageable in its current form. It feels like a really weird mishmash. And I just don't think of Ethan hanging out with the guns or wanting to be in a faction with the guns, and Lee Moriarty doesn't feel, I don't know. Anyway, let's.
Can I ask you a fun, just kind of mailbag question of my own that I have for you after this conversation?
Yeah. So
if you're booking, let's say the Trustbusters versus the Firm in Blood and Guts next year, who are you, who's more valuable to you? Who's going over in that situation? As they're the two worst factions I can think of off the top of my head.
Give me them again.
The Firm versus the Trustbusters. I think that's their name.
Oh, I thought you added I thought you added a third faction.
No. Just in that in a Blood and Guts match. Let's say that's the main event for Blood and Guts. And those are your two teams that you have to book. Who are you going with?
Well, who's representing the Firm?
Well, it's all five of them, right? So it's Morrissey and Moriarty and the Gun Club and Ethan Page, and then the Trustbusters are Slim J and Ari Davari and Parker Bordreau.
Parker and Sonny Kiss.
Sonny Kiss and one other person. I don't know. Someone else. A fifth person of your choosing.
I don't know. I get it.
I'm putting you on the spot. I'm saying.
I don't know. You know what? Have Moriarty beat up everybody and then just push him as a singles guy with no manager.
Okay. Cool. Well, there you go.
Have him Braun Strowman all their asses.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, I derailed you, but
okay.
That's just to point out that I think the Firm is, after one promo, on the level of the Trustbusters, and the last time we were on, I think we had a caller who said that, you know, they saw the Trustbusters like 17 times at a dark taping. So maybe not. Maybe that's me and Zach doing something. But, you know, that's kind of their level right now. So
it just feels so random. Ethan Page can be doing his own thing on his own, and Stokely doesn't feel like there's chemistry there. You know, Stokely can manage Lee Moriarty on dark. The Guns should just be doing their own thing. They've got enough personality, you know, to do their own thing. And Morrissey could be managed by Stokely, and that's just it. You know, like, that's it. Just Stokely's found his guy, and there's focus, and he talks, but Morrissey talks, and they work out some chemistry off air that they bring onto the camera, and they establish, you know, a clear dynamic between them, you know, a Heyman Lesnar type thing or whatever. Obviously Stokely doesn't have the Heyman cachet and Morrissey's no Lesnar, but you know, like, there, you know what that dynamic is, or even Heyman and Reigns, where it's something different than that, whatever, but it's a mess. Okay. I will now move on. Joe from New York emailed, and he said, first of all, where's Jim Ross? 2 weeks in a row, he's not on the show. Now, did I miss the first 10 minutes? I did miss the first 10 minutes, so did they mention it there? Because there's been no mention of him. Did he get in trouble, or is he suspended? Hope his health is good. I would think if it was a health issue, they would wish him well. Instead, he's got Punk and the Young Buck treatment, where they have not even brought up his name. Tyler, was Jim Ross on Rampage last Friday?
Yeah, I'm almost certain now that this is, you know, the first question, I'm sure someone's yelling at me live or listening to the podcast, but I'm like 98% sure Jim Ross was on the call with Excalibur and Taz last week. So I think he's just got they're swapping it around. But
yeah, it's weird to not bring him up. So I saw this email. I emailed someone in AEW with the initials TK, and he replied, and he said he's calling Rampage as we speak. So Ross is calling Rampage tonight. So there's your answer. Don't know why he wasn't on the Dynamite broadcast, but a certain source with initials TK just did get back to me right away and said he's producing him on Rampage at this very moment. So so Joe, you can tune in Friday to get your dose of Jim Ross.
I was trying to think of a joke of who a TK would be. That's not obviously TK. So I have nothing. I'm not fast in my face. So just want to say that to the audience.
I just want to protect my source there. I don't want to get him in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm being vague. Okay, Joe also says, tonight was an average show. It was a solid 2 hours, but not the kind of show that will grow the audience. This is the kind of show that will keep AEW right at where they are in the 850,000 to a million viewer range. I want to see if they can turn it up a notch next week since they are in a stadium show in New York City, Arthur Ashe Stadium. It holds over 23,000 people. They better turn up a notch. I think AEW has made a mistake not using East Coast markets. They've been hanging out in Chicago way too much. Philly, New York, and Boston are huge wrestling markets that you should be having big shows at more than once a year. What do you think about the build for next week's show? Does the New York City Stadium show feel like as big of a deal? Now, granted, you know, I think Tony Khan would say, we've made it so our world title match is going to be there. We're going to crown a new champion. That's big. And they've got the, a women's tag match, or a four-way, I should say, that they did a little angle for on this show. They've got the All-Atlantic title being defended. So, you know, and by the way, I don't think they announced more than that. So the main event might be going long, because you would think they'd announce a deeper lineup if they had time for more. The tag title match too. So actually, that is substantial. So yeah. So there's enough. Oh no, but the tag title match is on the Stadium Show, but it's on Rampage.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. So they actually
I think so.
Yep. So they actually have, I'm just doubting myself now because I got.
I know. Let me see if I can pull up.
Yeah.
What, you didn't get? You didn't get all of Excalibur's hyping?
Because they've got action. Yeah, I know. Exactly. Well, that's part of the problem too. Yeah, it's just I want, you know, like graphics that they create on Twitter, but I want those graphics on television, like the you know, like just a visual of the whole card. But anyway. I think they could have done a better job reminding people of how cool that setting is and what a big deal Grand Slam is. And I think they just, you know, I don't give them a great grade as far as that goes. Tyler, what do you think?
I agree. I have the card here. So the tag titles are on Dynamite. The Bronson Hook and that match is on Rampage.
Okay.
So everything you said, so is on Dynamite except for the Bronson and Hook match so far. So we have four matches confirmed for Dynamite next week. But yes, I would agree. I think last year's Arthur Ashe show felt, you know, huge for the company, had a huge match that delivered, and it felt like a, you know, coming out moment of, you know, hey, we're running stadiums again as AEW. We survived the pandemic. It felt, you know, like a celebration of AEW coming into a next level as a fan who had followed from the beginning. This year feels like a elevated branded episode of Dynamite. So, you know, more so than, you know, what do they call, what's their Bash of the Beach called? Battle at the Bay or whatever. But, you know, it's
Quake
bigger
at,
than Quake.
Quake at the Lake.
Yeah. Quake. Yeah. It's bigger than Quake at the Lake. But, it's not much more from a, you know, hype standpoint in the card. I mean, obviously a huge match in the main event with Danielson and Moxley for the vacated title. But, you know, before that it'd be Punk versus, you know, probably not MJF, right? They probably wouldn't do it that quickly. So the original plan was probably even less so than this. And I think that dictates, you know, they made a mention that there's plenty of great seats still available. I think it sold rather quick last year at the time, which I think shows what you need to know if you're, you know, tracking AEW from a business standpoint. We'll see what the final numbers are. But yeah, it feels definitely, I mean, you know, maybe 40% less special than it did last year, if I were to put a quantitative number on it.
I think that's a good percentage. I'm nodding along for that. okay, then he finally says, one final point, AEW's honeymoon period is over. The product is really cooled off. The crowds are not as hot and full of energy. Do you think CM Punk is wondering if running his mouth the way he did was worth it? I mean, he ran everyone down, but what was the point of doing that? What did he think he was really going to gain by doing that? Was what Punk did selfish? And has it hurt AEW? Not just because now it led to a fight that led to the subtraction of Kenny Omega, who was fresh back from his long hiatus and winning the Trios tournament with the Bucks. And that meant Don Callis was back, even though Kenny was sort of a babyface. Don Callis will never be a babyface. Well, I shouldn't say never, but he certainly isn't now. And Punk is subtracted. That's a lot of subtractions because Punk decided he had to set people straight and air his grievance. Like, was it selfish or was it sort of, like, necessary? He had to, the pressure was built up and the release valve had to be opened.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're going to forget about what he freaked out about, and I'm probably, you know, I think I've made it well known. I think someone saying something on a podcast and then maybe not wanting to listen to your advice, and that is something you freak out about. Like, I'd love to see you deal with a real problem is my take on this. In a real job that, you know, you, I, and everyone listening have been a part of. I think we've all dealt with coworkers that are more toxic to the workplace than Punk's interpretation of Adam Page, in my opinion. So that's just my opinion. I wasn't there to deal with all of it, but that's my take there. And so I think if it wasn't this, it was going to be something. But yeah, I mean, I think it certainly hurts AEW in the intermediate. I think there's no way to argue that, yeah, where we are right now is because of all this. Now, was this always festering and this was going to rear its head one way or the other? Probably so. So a year from now, 2 years from now, might be a pivotal point of, hey, this is where the company switched and went back to its roots and became a strong number two in perpetuity. Or it's a point where you can look back and this is the start of the fall. This is the Hogan and Russo in you know, feuding during the main event of a WCW pay-per-view moment. So, you know, time will tell, but I certainly think that in the very small micro detail of Punk freaking out about this, I think, yeah, I just think that was way unprofessional. And from what he laid out there was definitely did not need to be aired out in that way. It was definitely not that big of a deal. In my
opinion. And I think even before the Q&A, I mean, I sort of was hesitant to use the term because it's so loaded and it can seem like needlessly personal and inflammatory. But I was trying to think of a better term. But I kind of said Punk came across as a drama queen in the previous promo on TV, where it was like he just started. You could just tell he's just getting wrapped up in his own stuff, and it was just he was carrying this like wound up tension with him in a way that wasn't productive and focused. And so I wasn't surprised to see that release valve at that Q&A. And again, I mean, to have the adrenaline flowing, who knows if he got his, you know, somebody said, what if he got a concussion and just like kind of lost, you know, people were looking at him and observing him and it just felt like something was not right about him, you know, in terms of and it could have just been, he's so emotional, but like, what if he had a concussion, just wasn't making good judgment calls at that point. And maybe Tony takes that into consideration later. But even if that's not the case, he's got this injury that he's having to cope with. And I mean, I have some sympathy for him in that regard, but ultimately it felt like it became about him and not being a true leader and what was best for the company. So anyway, yeah, I am agreeing the product right now doesn't feel hot, but I think this was a deep breath episode and MJF's trying to get back on track. You got to get the belt on Moxley. And maybe they're going to put the belts on the Acclaimed, and you got some assets that they haven't been utilizing that now I think you give the minutes to. You know, it's the NBA NHL analogy. Give the ice time or the court time to your starters. Decide who your starters are, decide who your short bench is, and go with the shorter bench and give them time to get over. And I think things will be fine and just less buzzworthy for shows like this. But that's what you want. You don't want – I did a 4-hour flagship last week and it was calls for 4 straight hours. Once we got past our introduction, you know, talking to Nick Houseman about his role in that Q&A, it was about 3.5 hours of calls and it was just one after another. That's not the sign of a healthy company when the controversy is creating the most calls. So yeah, get back on track. Okay. Let's get to an outside correspondent here. We've got Michael calling up, who just left the building in Albany. Michael, thank you for calling. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Wade, it's been a while.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you reaching out, and we've got some questions for you about the show tonight. But first, okay. I want to begin because our last emailer, as you may have heard, if you were able to listen before he brought you on, said that he feels like the product has cooled off and the crowd is not as hot and as full of energy. So talk about what your experience was in the building tonight in terms of did it seem like a hot product or a product that's cooled off compared to your expectations?
I mean, it's definitely cooled off since, you know, the start of the company for sure. You have the those key players with the company that everybody, you know, wants to – that the ones, you know, they're showing up for and the ones they want to cheer for and sing along with when they come out. And I definitely think this was I think you just called it a breath of fresh air type episode.
A deep breath episode.
A deep breath episode, yeah. Nah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was a good little show to come to. I happened to be nearby, made a last-minute trip, and Just was heading out after the very start of the main event for Rampage. So,
what's going on last on Rampage?
The main event was Samoa Joe defending the TV title against Josh Woods.
Okay. Samoa Joe and Josh Woods headlining a cable show on TNT. That feels weird.
And then they did announce. I heard you talking about some of the. The matches for next week, they did announce on Rampage a couple of them. Brody King and Murphy challenged Darby and Sting. I believe they said to a no DQ Ooh. Match.
Okay.
And then Jade did her backstage promo, as always, and Diamante walked into the shot and said that she would be there next week in New York City and that she was bringing some friends with her. So I don't know if that was a somewhat of a mixed, like a tag team match or what it's going to be or if it's one-on-one, but...
Interesting.
And then the other one was... of course, Jericho tapped out on Dynamite, and then you had Claudio come out to do a promo, and they had Jericho on commentary, and he got up after he had heard enough and said that he wanted talked about all his world titles that he's held, and says that he wants to go for the Ocho. He wants to go for number 8, so he challenged Claudio next week for the ROH title on Dynamite.
Huh. Oh, wow. Well, the world title match won't be going as long as I was figuring with the addition of those matches to Dynamite.
Yeah, that definitely,
I mean, Jericho...
definitely
yeah,
cut things down.
Yeah. I mean, that's fine. There's still time, you know, to have some good length matches. But I was like, are they going to do 60 minutes in Queens with the lineup that they announced? I would have announced Brody and Murphy against Darby and Sting a week ahead of time. I how do you not announce, like, Sting wrestling on Dynamite has to be framed as a big deal that you talk about for weeks ahead of time, but at least a week ahead of time. Now it's only going to be mentioned 5 days ahead of time in front of half the audience that could have heard about it. I question their judgment. I know they're trying to make Rampage a newsworthy show where you get to hear about some matches, but Tyler, I would not have excluded that from tonight's announcements.
Yeah, I think it's just the rigid booking mentality of Tony Khan, because Darby's got a match against Matt Hardy on Rampage that we will see on Friday, and I think his thought process would be get through that match and then announce the next match and not kind of gloss over the match that you're going to see. But, yeah, I mean, for special occasions like Sting on Dynamite in front of, you know, 15, 20,000 people, whatever it's going to be, yeah, you'd want to present that as a, you know, one of your top 4 or 5 things to show to the audience.
And just don't put Matt Hardy against Darby on Rampage. We don't need Matt Hardy against Darby. You know, you can do that in October, but focus on Darby and Sting. So, yeah. And heck, I mean, Jericho wanting to go after a title he's never held. Jeez, that, like, give us more than 5 days of hype on that. It loads the lineup. And I know Tony thinks, you know, social media accomplishes a lot of that. But, boy, there's a lot of people not on social media, and even those who are, framing it as a big deal, announcing it a week or two ahead of time on Dynamite makes it feel bigger. So I question the strategy. Okay. Tyler, bring up MJF in the crowd direction, because we were talking earlier about that. Go ahead and frame the question for Michael.
Yeah. I mean, we're watching it live on TV. It definitely seemed like the crowd, and I'm curious what percentage you would give it, was behind MJF as a babyface when he was definitely going for a heel persona. So, you know, did you get that feeling there in the crowd that, was it everyone was for him, or was it a select group of people that drowned out a majority of people that were booing him? You know, what was the audience there in Albany, what percentage would you say were behind MJF as a babyface?
And I would add too, what was the ebb and flow?
Yeah.
Like, did it change based on anything MJF did?
When his music hit, everybody lost their absolute mind, and a lot of them transitioned over to boos. You could hear, you know, that initial pop, and then kind of boos, and then when he tried to cut them off at the knees, that worked fairly well. It seemed like he kept having to knock it back down, though, because of I think people are wanting to cheer him, but there definitely was an ebb and flow, and he kept having to fight the tide there. So,
what do you think of MJF's promo in the building?
I don't know. He's there's a lot of yelling into the microphone, and
yes, I found it.
And it's almost, I think you once described it, Dolph Ziggler in a similar way, just screaming, yeah. screaming. And, you know, I think he tends to go for a lot of the cheap, you know, cut downs, and, you know, that's fine, I guess, for his, where he is now. But, you know, it's coming along, and, you know, he was doing all the Albany insults, which I'm not from here, so knock yourself out.
But. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that applies to the national audience, too. You know, how many people at home are like, how dare he say that about the people of Albany, of whom I know no one and I have no investment in there. It's like, you know.
Right.
Yeah. You're playing to a national.
We're not even from here.
Yes, yes. As far as crowd reaction goes, did John Moxley get the best response of the night by a wide margin? Who else was in his category, if anyone? And then what was kind of the next tier of responses, like Strickland and Lee, or Jungle Boy, or Tony Storm and Athena, and I guess Danielson would probably be in that mix too.
It was definitely John Moxley overall. I think Jungle Boy had I know he always is. He has a pretty good pop, but it actually surprised me a little bit. And I've been in the building before when he's come out, but his was pretty strong. Of course, people wanted to sing along to Jericho, and it seemed like in his match with Brian, it was like a 60-40 in favor of Jericho until. Toward the end, and people were, I mean, I could definitely tell a difference of people in favor, chanting for Jericho. And then, toward the end, when he started rallying, you could, people started, you know, getting behind Brian, and, they, embraced the victory at the end.
Was there any crowd response that surprised you, either more intense or less intense, or just different than you anticipated for anyone on the show? And you can include Rampage, too.
They didn't do their typical entrance, but I was surprised it wasn't louder for the Acclaimed when they came out.
Interesting. Yeah.
I actually came in part just to see that entrance because I was pretty excited about the tag match they had at the pay-per-view. And, I was a little surprised that it wasn't as loud as I thought it would be. Of course, they, you know, didn't do their normal thing, but I think next week will be probably a total reversal of what I saw, and it'll be back like it was at like it was at the pay-per-view, so...
Was there anything off camera with Tony Khan or anything else that just wasn't on TV that's worth bringing up?
Oh, yes. Tony came out about three times, and every time he walked out initially, it was like the first people, I guess, that caught a glimpse of him started booing. And then it went right into cheers, and I was like, that's interesting.
Weird. yeah. Now, why did they switch to cheers? Because more people like him, but there's just some vocal fans who are like, you know, boo you because of MJF.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, the smart fans, you know, trying to express their voice. And, of course, he has, you know, that infectious demeanor where he automatically, you know, just gets the crowd pumped up. So that was probably a big part of it.
So. Yeah, he is more enthusiastic. Tony Khan is a more enthusiastic ambassador for AEW than the Target lady on SNL was for Target. I mean, he is so it's every day. It's just like, it's like asking a dog if they want to go on a walk, and they just put the leash in their mouth and just shake it around. Like, yeah, let's do it. Like, that's how Tony Khan is. Just, you know, even if you're booing him, you understand in the end, this is not a job to him. This is a love and a passion. And it's sort of like, oh, that's right. There's a really big super fan bringing the show to me. And I that's why I'm not sure he's going to end up being, you know, the booed commissioner of the league. I don't think that's going to have legs to it. I could be wrong. What do you think, Tyler?
Oh man, it's hard to say. I I would say if he changes like his demeanor, you know, if you've been to a show once or twice and you're used to him coming out and pumping you up, and maybe he doesn't come out the next time he's in town, you know, there's little things like that that can go a long way. I mean, if you have continued issues backstage, I think anything's possible, right? Where if people can target one person, Tony Khan being at the head of that pyramid, as being the reason that their company is not as good as it once was, I think there's no way to avoid that. But, you know, I don't think he's on that track currently.
I wonder about the Stokely Hathaway promo and if it how it came across to you and how it came across, you think, to the crowd.
So, you know, I kind of expected those guys to come out when MJF was out there at the, you know, at the very end, and they came out. I took notice that MJF just kind of disappeared, and I never really noticed where he went. I guess he just walked off camera. And then when it felt like, I don't know, I think the pairing of all of those guys is a hodgepodge group, and he was sitting there trying to, like, justify to the crowd, like, their importance one by one. And the hug was definitely weird. And I think didn't he even, like, readdress it, like, hey, you know, I just hugged you, so please acknowledge this. And I think that almost made Cass look foolish or something. I don't know. I don't know what to make of the group yet, but, you know, each of the guys, each one of them singularly is a decent talent for sure. But I just wish MJF would go away from these stables and groups and do his own thing. And I don't know why they keep doing it, because I never thought he really needed it. So.
Yeah, it didn't seem like what was the group with FTR called? I just drawn a blank.
The Pinnacle.
Yeah, I mean, they just didn't, like, appear on TV enough to become, like, this you know, Four Horsemen baked-in image or Evolution. You know, it's just, like, it just didn't seem together enough for it to really stick. You know, where that just, it felt like that there was an era where that was their, you know, the top faction. Granted, this was sort of a way to let people know he's not in the firm. He just sort of, they might be there if needed. You know, they're a phone call away from helping one another, but it to us, it felt like the promo kind of went on a while. I hate to ask loaded questions. I try not to, but did it seem like, okay, Stokely, this is going on quite a while. Maybe we're ready for something else.
Yeah. Definitely going through each one of them one by one, it drug on. And, there were a lot of people that just, they were like, okay, I think this is the bathroom break. Once he got to, like, person number three, it's like, okay, I got time. definitely drug on.
Was there any other part of the live experience that dragged? Was there a match where the crowd was disengaged?
I believe the women's match, actually on both shows, sad to say, there was a cosplayer in the crowd of Macho Man Randy Savage. And I guess the crowd got bored, and he stood up the entire time at the back part of the floor seats, and they started Macho Man chants.
Oh, jeez.
Of course,
he's called into the show. I might be the guy who called into the show before. I don't know if it's the Macho Man guy from that area or not, but
I don't know.
Yeah.
The entire upper bowl was blocked off, and they probably only had 3,500, I would say, maybe in attendance. A lot of the where the hard camera was, it was speckled through. But if you had to force everybody all in one space, you probably had maybe 3/4 of the bottom bowl. The floor was full. And then once Rampage started, it probably went down to a full hard camera side. And then people just kept leaving in droves, like match after match. You know, Mars Word Day and all. So.
Was there a video package where people were into it, like maybe hooks? Was there a video package where people weren't into it? Or was it just kind of hard to tell because they were all pretty brief?
Trying to remember, there was... There was one that people, I can't remember what, which one it was. There was something that came on, because, you know, with Dynamite, it seems to rock and roll match after match after match, and then you can definitely tell when they throw to the video, because there was a one point when Justin Roberts was coming back, he said, when we come back, we'll be going to the video, and whatever that was, I can't remember which part that was. The crowd was pretty, like I normally do.
Yeah, no problem. Tyler, is there anything else you want to ask him?
Yeah, I had just had a micro question and then kind of more macros. The first one, kind of more on the MJF subject. When Jamie Hayter came out at the end of that women's match that you kind of already talked about, it seemed like, and I'm curious if it's the same people that were cheering MJF. They seemed to be cheering her when she was hitting the, you know, the babyface world champion. With a chair. So did that come across to you there live the way it did to me on the TV? And do you think that's the same people that were cheering for MJF were cheering for Jamie Hayter just because they've decided that they want to cheer for her just like with MJF? Or was it a little less pronounced than the MJF thing?
Yeah, I think so. I think you have these pockets of people with AEW because they don't necessarily clearly, you know, just in wrestling in general, you don't clearly define who's who anymore, you know, and what side they're on. So I think people were just like, I like this person, and then they run with it. So I think that's what you had with the Jamie Hayter thing, because people were rallying behind her, and when she came out and did what she did, I think they were just going to cheer her simply because they liked her, regardless of, oh, my God, I can't believe you're doing this. So I didn't expect it to actually go that way, but...
And then the more macro question, you said you've been to this arena before to see AEW, I think. I've
not been here. I've been to others.
Okay. Others. So would you say that the crowd matched here in Albany to where you've been before from a demographic standpoint? Was it, you know, the same level of, you know, kids, families, or just more hardcore, you know, people in their 20s, 30s, 40s that are wrestling fans? Just was it similar to other places or was it a different crowd?
I actually noticed here there was there tended to be some older folks, I guess. There was a lot of dads with their kids and, of course, mostly hardcore fans, presumably. But I don't think you could compare this. Before, I went to a Full Gear pay-per-view, and that was a different dynamic. But, this seemed like kind of like what a SmackDown crowd might be,
okay.
If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Michael, is there anything else you want to add from your experience tonight before we move on?
Don't believe so. Powerhouse Hobbs got a pretty decent response. I don't know if that came across. And the presentation, everybody seemed to like that. I saw the what I call the Cody entrance set up when they were coming back from commercial, and I went, Obviously, I knew it wasn't him, but I didn't know who it was going to be for. And then I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I expected them to – him to have a firm direction coming out of the pay-per-view, and then as soon as he got on the mic, I believe it was, they started chanting, "We want Ricky," that was a pretty loud chant in house, and I was like, I actually said out loud, I was like, "He's injured, he ain't gonna be here," thought,
but, yeah.
But I was there we go.
They played his music, he struck his pose, and they cut to a break or a video package at that point. Did he address the crowd, or did he just leave at that point, Ricky Starks?
Say that one more time.
Did Ricky Starks talk to the crowd at all, or did he just strike his pose and then leave?
No, he left. Yep.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, Michael, I appreciate you calling in. Really good details on the experience tonight. And, I think we got our questions in.
All right, yes, sir. I'll my next event I'm going to try to get to is going to be the Full Gear pay-per-view, which I believe is accompanied with a live Rampage the night before.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's last year.
Yep.
I said both.
Yep, that's what we're shooting for next. Can I ask you a question? Do you know Adam Cole's status right now? Is he cleared and set to return, or do you think they're holding off on him?
I do not know, and it is a question I should ask some people. My assumption is he's just still hurt, or they don't want to bring him back just because what he was going to be involved in involves maybe a still injured Kyle O'Reilly. Bobby Fish isn't with the company anymore, and the Bucks and Kenny aren't with the company, and that was the last big angle he was in. So he's a big enough name and a valuable enough asset that I almost think keeping him off TV and bringing him back with a hard reset would make more sense. So even if he's cleared, if I'm Tony, I take my time and make sure when he comes back, there's a big splash for it. And so, you know, you hate to keep him off TV when you have so many subtractions from the roster, but you know, if he comes back and as a heel aims for a title shot against Moxley after Moxley's done with MJF, you could go that route. I just don't think having him hanging out, you know, just sort of hanging out, not as a major star, is the best use of him at this point.
Yeah, I would agree. And my only concern there is, CM Punk seemed pretty honest during his whole media scrum appearance. And he talked about Adam Cole very glowingly, but said he just hopes that he's healthy. And that was the most serious he was that entire scrum. So that was like a pretty big red flag for me that something was going on. And, you know, they're thinking about his long-term health and not re-injuring and maybe it being worse. But, yeah, I don't have any info in there besides that. That was just, you know, of all the things, I was like, oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
So that was just my take.
Yep.
Good question. Thanks, Michael.
All right. Yep. Before I jump off here, I just want to put over your coverage on the Vince McMahon's exit and this CM Punk debacle. I jumped back in VIP simply for the news that popped up there in July, and it's been your analysis and coverage of it has been top notch, and just want to put that over and tell everybody to check it out and go VIP.
Awesome. Michael, I appreciate it very much. Welcome back, and I appreciate the kind words. I'm proud of the coverage of those two stories that we've brought you, and I appreciate you you saying what you said about it.
Yes, sir. You guys have a good night.
Cool. Yep, you too. Let us know next time you go to a show, and if you can be an outside correspondent, and feel free to call in on other weeks too when you're just watching it on TV. All right, let's go to second onsite correspondent, Matt, who stayed through the main event. Matt, welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Wade, yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah, so we just talked to Michael for a while, so we won't grill you super in-depth, and I know that it's getting close to midnight where you are too. It's been a long night. But I guess I'll just initially get your take. It's the same thing we asked Michael. Did it feel like a red hot product in a red hot crowd or a cooled off product and not so red hot crowd? Like what's your vibe coming out of this in terms of the state of AEW, at least in Albany on September 14th?
Yeah. So I would say the crowd was hot, but kind of piggybacking off what the last caller said, I heard a little bit, there wasn't a big crowd. So, you know, maybe 4,000 fans, I agree with what he said. Those that were in attendance, super hot for most of the show, I would say, all the way through Dark, Rampage, and obviously Dynamite. So, you know, on one hand, really hot for the crowd or for the acts, but just not a big crowd. I've seen WWE house shows here in this venue before that got, you know, probably double what was in attendance tonight for AEW. So I was a little disappointed with that, but for those that were there, it was, you know, they were definitely hot.
And Albany, it's sort of hard for me to compare what Albany is as a market to other markets, because it's a couple hours out of New York City. It's a few hours out of Boston. Mm-hmm. It's a couple hours out of Syracuse. It's just sort of like in the middle of New York. It's got, you know, a population of like 600-some thousand. I don't really know what its identity is as a wrestling town. And like, so, I mean, where are you from, and how would you describe Albany as a wrestling city?
Yeah. So great question. I'm from the area, probably 20 minutes outside of the city of Albany. And I would say in the Attitude Era, definitely hit its peak. I mean, if you go back, Stone Cold, the show that he did, the beer truck, was actually in Albany. And that was a sold out, you know, top of the rafters, sold out crowd. I was at plenty of shows when I was a kid at the Attitude Era that were sold out. More recently, I would say Lower Bowl, half of the Upper Bowl when WWE is here. For a house show, the whole Lower Bowl. A good wrestling city, I would say, but the recent shows I went to were a little more sporadic, but tonight was definitely the lowest attendance that I've seen for a wrestling show. And I know Impact's Bound for Glory is coming here in a couple of weeks, so you know it's probably not a major market, but it is a wrestling town when the product's right or when there's enough kind of energy going for it.
What was the your description of the crowd response for MJF? It's a story we're watching, and it seemed like to us and Michael, who called in, who was in the building, you know, said his crowd pop for MJF, and then MJF seemed to be mm-hmm. working very hard with mixed results to get the crowd to turn against him. In fact, we got an email from David in North Carolina who said that it might be more trouble than it's worth, so I'm bringing it up here, to even try to have him stay a heel. If they can't turn the tide on MJF, they should stop trying to go against the tide. Sometimes heels are just over, and that's how Steve Austin got over. So what's your take, and what would be your advice about what's going on with MJF to either turn him face or how to have him did it work tonight, trying to get the crowd that right now seems to be predisposed to cheer him to start booing him?
Yeah, so I would say outside of Jon Moxley, MJF received the biggest pop of the night. You know, the crowd was very into him. And I would say by the end of the promo, he did get the crowd against him. But he, like you said, he had to work very, very hard in order to get that to happen. With that being said, I don't know what a babyface MJF would look like. So I don't know that it would work in the same way. I don't, you know, it's almost as if the crowd, and I know I am, certainly into his act as a heel, and I just don't know if he came out as a babyface if it would work. Now, it probably would, right? But there's just something about his charisma and his confidence as a heel that I would say the crowd stood when he came out, and the crowd stood for his whole promo. So there's something to be said for that, right? The crowd didn't sit down until Hathaway came out with his crew and started talking. So, you know, MJF really had the crowd eating out of his hands, and whether that's a babyface or a heel, it's a hot act, and you know, you need to continue to ride it. But I would say outside of Moxley, he was the highest, and you know, like you said with Austin, you have to ride with it, and I wouldn't fight it too hard when making him be a heel, because everybody was just eaten out of the palm of his hand every word that he said. So
did the Stokely Hathaway promo seem to go on a little longer? Did it gain momentum as it went along? Like, what was your take on that?
Yeah, it definitely was a come down from, especially from MJF. And, you know, it actually took me about 5 minutes in to even realize that, you know, Morrissey was out there. I recognized the giant man, obviously, but to recognize that it was Morrissey, it took a while. I was sitting on the opposite side of the camera, so I didn't see his face right away. And it just seemed like it went on a little long, especially from where we were. You know, like I said, everybody standing up listening to every single word of MJF, and then for mm-hmm. Hathaway, there was definitely a come down and just not as into what he was saying. Or care, or a reason to care about it.
Was there anything about attending tonight's show that changed your perception of anything or anybody?
No, I wouldn't say that. yeah. at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of the same.
Our last correspondent didn't stay all the way through Rampage, so kind of spoiler alert for people who just want to watch Friday. You can fast forward, you know, hit the 30-second forward button a couple times. But
yeah.
Talk about the main event. Talk about the main event and anything else from Rampage that stood out for you.
Yeah, so the main event was Samoa Joe. He was in defending the ROH Championship, and he won. I forget who he defended against. Someone I don't watch every single week, so I'm not currently up on the stories, but it was a believable build to the match, and it was good to see Samoa Joe. The crowd was into Joe. I was not really into the act that who he was facing. And then in the other match, Sting faced Matt Darby Allin with Sting faced Matt Hardy. So that was an interesting match. Matt Hardy had a little botch going towards doing a moonsault. He botched it on the ropes towards the end of the match.
Mm.
And so Darby Allin won that match. We'll say also after the main event, Wardlow came out. That was his first appearance of the night. And Wardlow actually received a really nice pop from the crowd that was left. So he came and made a save for Samoa Joe after the match. And, yeah, they said it off air. I believe it was off air, but they're going to tag up next week, Samoa Joe and Wardlow, at the show next week at Arthur Ashe. And the crowd seemed to be into that. They were chanting Ward Joe, so they're pretty excited about that possibility. So,
Tyler, anything you want to jump in with?
The only other thing, I was curious about the reaction to the Acclaimed. If you thought it was on par or above or below what you thought, what you were expecting.
It was definitely above. I wouldn't say what I thought. I know after the match they had at All Out, it was obviously they won the crowd over and they had a lot of momentum coming out of that. So I knew the crowd maybe would be excited for them, but the reaction they received was definitely on the high end. And, you know, if I was thinking about, yeah, I know Tony Khan was asked if they should have made an audible and had the Acclaim win the last title match. And if he was waiting to see other reactions, I don't think anything tonight would have swayed him from deciding maybe to put the titles on the Acclaim next week, because they definitely received a really big ovation. The crowd was very into them and what their act with Billy Gunn. So definitely received a really positive reaction. I wouldn't sense any cooling off at all on there. It was, you know, right above or at the level I would expect it to be.
Did Tony?
Then, okay.
Oh, go ahead, Tyler. No, I'm go ahead.
Yeah,
yep.
I just got one more. Just curious, and sure. I think it's a positive for this question that you said you're not, you know, like as locked into every single character, and that's not a bad thing as I state this question. But being there live tonight, what would you say is the second most appealing match? Obviously the main event between, you know, Moxley and Danielson would be the main event of the whole series next week, but what's the number two program going into that in your mind after seeing it all laid out tonight live and in person?
Oh yeah, so I would say out of everything, there's Jericho and Claudio. That was on Rampage, so probably, sorry, another spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
I should have said that. There was a talking segment with Tony Schiavone and Claudio, and Jericho interrupted mid promo and challenged him to a match next week. So those two are going to be facing next week, and that would be, you know, the number two that I'd be looking forward to. Besides that, the, you know, the Acclaimed and Swerve in Our Glory, just putting on another match, but having not seen Claudio and Jericho, I would expect that to be a pretty good match as well.
Did
Wade, go ahead.
Yep. Did thanks. Did Tony Khan come out at the end of the show after the Rampage main event, or did they just go off after the match?
They went out after that, but Tony Khan came out before Dynamite. Tony Khan came out again before Rampage. Tony Khan came out at least two times, maybe three times, and was very energetic and just put over Albany and how great the crowd was and how they were talking about it in the back and just made everybody sort of got everybody amped up and appreciated. Sort of everybody appreciated that we were here and all of that. So he made a couple of appearances, and he received pretty big ovations each time. There may be a couple of spatters of boos, but I would say 90% was very positive and appreciative of Tony Khan. So he made more than one appearance, and each one was positive.
Would you build this company around Jon Moxley right now based on the crowd response tonight?
With how he was as the interim champion, and I love CM Punk, and I'm upset. He's the one that I'm really upset I didn't get to see tonight. But I would have I would have wanted them to keep the belt on Jon Moxley to begin with, even going into that match with CM Punk, and nothing that I saw tonight would have swayed me from that. He received the biggest ovation, and even when he came out at the end with Danielson, he got the biggest reaction. He's the biggest star. I would absolutely build a company around him. He's a believable champion, and you know everybody loves him, and universal support by the crowd.
Cool. Anything you want to close with, Matt? Anything else to share from your experience at the show?
No, so this was the first AEW show I was able to go to. I've been a fan since kind of they started, and yeah, I've been kind of circling it and trying to find shows around my area that I could maybe go to. So I was really excited when I saw that the show came to our area. So I was able to not travel too far to go, and you know, just the crowd energy and the involvement and everything, it lived up to my expectations for sure. I would have liked to have seen more people there just to grow the company, but you know, it was kind of everything that I was hoping it would be. So they lived up to it, and you know, it's definitely worth going to an AEW show just for the crowd energy and everything there. So I would recommend that to anyone listening and whatever. So it was fun.
Great. Matt, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, appreciate it, Wade. Thank you.
You bet. Take care. All right, well, probably wrap up here unless, Tyler, we don't get to something that you want to bring up. We'll wrap up with Brian Tabasco, who's been on hold for a while here. Brian, thanks for holding through a couple on-site correspondence and us talking some emails. What's in your mind about Dynamite tonight? We won't go too long with you, just let you know, because we're at 2-hour mark here.
Yeah, definitely. I thought, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. I thought the show was really good pretty much from top to bottom. It was a pace, a lot of moments came to breathe and everything. And there was really just one part I didn't really like, or it was actually a series of parts. Alex Marvez is a terrible interviewer. I actually saw the segment on AEW Dark when Britt Baker was in the room, like, quote unquote, beating up Hikaru Shida, even though there was probably no one else in the room at the time. And his acting is terrible. I mean, they should just leave the interviewing to Lexi Nair and Tony Schiavone, or Schiavone. Marvez is terrible. I mean, get him, like, have him do like an office job or something. You gotta take him off TV. He absolutely kills the vibe. At least. But, you know, just to kind of echo a point from the your last caller about building the company around Moxley, and I would have kept the belt on Moxley as well, because Punk got injured again. It's the second time Punk has been injured doing something stupid in 3 months. Like, first he injured himself jumping in the crowd and hitting his foot on the gate. And apparently the second injury occurred during like a suicide dive or a plancha or something. It's like, you're in your mid 40s. You don't need to do that anymore. So I previously of the opinion that Punk shouldn't be fired, but now considering, you know, he's spent most of the life of this contract on basically nursing injuries that really shouldn't have happened in the first place, I think maybe it's just better to part ways with him at this point. Just wondering what you guys' thoughts are on that.
Well, I mean, the estimates right now is he's going to miss up to 9 months. He's going to be 44 and a half years old. May go close. I mean, he's going to be close to, yeah. I mean, it's just – it's not, you know, he took time off that MMA training. You know, the, like you can say, well, he doesn't have the bump card, you know, on him that, say, the Young Bucks have or Kenny Omega have, but MMA training is a different kind of, you know, it's kept him in shape, but it's grueling. And, yeah, I just – and he doesn't come across as somebody who's going to be, for a variety of reasons, durable, as durable in, deep into his 40s as some other wrestlers are. And, you know, you wonder if Tony Khan's not making note of that and thinking, you know, did you get – you know, is this Joe Montana on the Kansas City Chiefs? You know, it's just, it's near the end.
Yep.
And maybe TK's getting that vibe and Punk's like, well, you had some EVPs attack me and you signed me to this contract. I want all my money or I'm going to sue. I mean, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Tony Khan's not saying anything about this. He's not mentioning his name, but they still have the Bucks, Kenny and Punk as of yesterday, as of last night, still on their roster page. But you can't trust their website because they're terrible at updating it. But, you know, they took them out of the open and they haven't mentioned them. They didn't show highlights of the match. You know, it's a weird vibe right now. But, yeah, Moxley's the guy. And I think Moxley made that case a couple weeks ago, you know, opposite of Punk, just going, I'm here. I'm in my prime. This is my time. And it seemed to be his way of saying it's my time as opposed to Punk's time. And, you know, Punk rubs people the wrong way, left and right, his whole life, going back to ROH. You know, he told Kevin Owens, don't wear a T-shirt. That's disrespectful. You know, it's like, I mean, it's just he just speaks his mind in weird ways, and he's always, you know, been abrasive. And he prides himself, I think, on just being honest and speaking his mind, but that comes with a price. And, you know, sometimes people lose their – who get to know him and be around him, some people his personality doesn't work with them. It's abrasive. Other people, you know, I've talked to people who like him and like hanging out with him and looked up to him and thought he was a really cool veteran and offered advice and was really open. So, I mean, I'm by no means saying it's all one way or the other with him, but there's definitely, I'm sure there's some people, and Moxley might have been one of them, who's like, you know what, why are you paying that guy all that money to just get hurt and be a, you know, be a bit of a disruptor in the locker room? Let's just go with people who are ready
exactly.
to go and who the crowd's over. Yeah.
I mean, if I'm Tony Khan, I'm pissed right now because twice I've tried building my company around him as champion, and twice he's blown it through taking stupid injuries that shouldn't have happened. So it's, if I'm Khan, I'm pissed. I don't know if he's just so starstruck with Punk that he's not pissed, but you know, if I'm Khan, I would just move on and part ways with them, you know, and try the best to avoid a lawsuit. So.
Yeah. I think he was, I don't know if starstruck, but enamored with the idea of being the guy who got Punk out of retirement, you know, and I think reality, mm-hmm. you know, they say never meet your heroes. And, you know, Khan met a hero. And, you know, that hero, I think, I don't know how Tony felt because he hasn't said anything about it to me or anyone I know, but I think Punk was, it was insubordinate the way that he treated Tony during that Q&A.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to bring up, Brian?
I did want to comment a little on the MJF thing. I think like he was struggling against a rising tide, but I think he finally got the crowd to turn on him when he mentioned Moxley's battle with alcoholism, you know, because that's like a low blow, and the crowd didn't really like that. But I also think it had partly to do with the crowd had kind of tired themselves out by cheering him so much, you know, and they had already, you know, been pretty active through the first match of the night. So I think it was a combination of the alcoholic barb and just the crowd being tired out. And one thing I did want to ask you guys about, then I'll kind of leave it late. During the Hathaway segment, other than like the Ass Boys chant, it seemed like Ethan Page got a nice little pop from the crowd. I mean, it wasn't like huge or anything, but they did bring up him in the All Atlantic title, and I'm just wondering if you guys think that maybe he'd be a good candidate to win that belt, because I he's a guy I like a lot. I've liked him a long time, and I really think he could use a. I really think he could use a run with a title belt like that.
Tyler, what is Ethan Page best usage scenario?
Yeah, I mean, best usage is, I would say, not in this group. As I stated earlier, I feel bad for him. He's had kind of two bad groups that he's probably going to get the most out of. I mean, he got the most out of the last group, but he'll probably get the most humanly possible out of this group. But yeah, I think him being, you know, that heel, you know, I guess like what Jay Lethal is right now without a group is kind of my high end for Ethan Page at the moment. And, you know, when you have time to have good matches every 3 weeks on TV, you get some talking segments, then things can happen. And I think that's the high end for Ethan Page at the moment. And when it comes to the All Atlantic title, you know, if you want that title to be anything, which I don't give it much respect currently personally, but if you want it to give it respect, I think you need someone to carry it for a long time to kind of give it that Jade Cargill rub to that TBS title, because it just is a non-meaning title. So I think Paige winning it off Pac would be kind of a sugar high for Ethan Page, and then that title would kind of be continue to be not much, and I don't think it would help Page in the long run. So I think he's in a just rough spot all the way around in this scenario.
They still haven't defined what it is, but it seems like they want it to be the title that's defended at non-AEW events across oceans. And, you know, I don't know that Ethan's the guy for that either. Yeah, I don't know if it fits. But, Ethan's one of my guys who, if I'm like, okay, I'd have to look at my depth chart, but if I'm going to focus on like roughly 14 singles wrestlers and, you know, six tag teams or eight tag teams and six or eight women wrestlers, like he might be that 13th, 14th guy. You know, I just think he's reliable. He can be a gatekeeper. He's good on the mic. He carries himself well. I hear he's really professional. He just approaches things in a professional way, and he's wrestles a style where he's probably not going to get hurt and derail things. And frankly, there's some value in that right now. If I'm Tony, I kind of tell people slow the F down, you know, like let's have an economy of moves. Let's, you know, if we can tell a good story in the ring without doing a move that might lead to you completely derailing our storyline with an injury, how about we edit that out and do something safer? It's something WWE learned the hard way. They've done, you know, locker room seminars on it. Producers are told, you know, to help wrestlers understand that you don't have to work safe style like Miz, you know, to avoid injury, but you want to be smart about it. And you know, this is awesome chance and going for star ratings that, you know, from people who accumulate stars in their ratings based on the density and frequency of needless high spots that aren't sold is the wrong audience to be catering to if you want to stay healthy and serve your company. So Ethan Page fits, you know, I would do more with him. I think he's, you know, I mean, I'm not going to make him my world champion for sure, but, you know, He can be that agitating heel that can do a clean job and help elevate somebody. Brian, good. I'm glad you called. Good to hear from you. Any quick closing words, or is that about it?
Just one last quick thing. Hopefully with the Jason Solomon brought this up. Hopefully with Hayter and Baker doing a good program, taking some time and building up Hayter with a win, maybe they could build her up as one to take the belt from Cargill. I know that'd be a hell of a match, seeing those two powerhouses going against each other. Anyway, have a good night, guys.
Cool. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. What do you think of the four-way, the setup for Tyler, and where do you think they go with it, and what about Brian's idea or what Brian relayed?
Yeah, tell me who's in it again. I apologize for the one tonight, you mean, or the
well, they no, they but, so they announced Toni Storm versus Serena Deeb versus Britt Baker versus Athena next week. So that doesn't include Hayter, but they did the angle with Hayter, which is a bit of a swerve, but she's not. She's not a babyface, but she's just not with Baker. Yeah.
Gotcha. You know, it is how it is when you're typing. You kind of lose, especially on those Excalibur segments. I zone out completely. So,
totally.
But I think, you know, it's a little WWE-ish, but I don't think that's a negative all the time to set up a match by having a tag match. If you don't overdo it, I think some tried and true things in wrestling are good. So, you know, that's there. And yeah, I mean, Hayter and Baker still have an issue, right? So to me, Hayter is still a heel at this point, but she's a heel that is not getting along with another heel, which is totally fine. Not all faces, not all heels have to get along. So I like the nuance there in that story. If they continue that route, I'm fearful that that note will be missed and she'll just be a babyface, which is fine. It'll just be weird and clunky. But I think in the end, it'll be Storm retaining and, you know, Hayter and Baker will be a program, just like Bryant said. And, I went to two shows in the month of August, one in Columbus, one in Cleveland. And Jamie Hayter was, I would say, the second or most over woman of the show each time I went. So there is a bubbling there for her, and we saw that tonight with her coming out. So I think there is potential to build a star a la, you know, kind of the Acclaimed, who have been there for a long time, have yeah. been in not the main spot, but could be a potential, you know, up-and-coming star for the company.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Tyler, anything else from the show that we didn't bring up that you want to bring up?
I don't think so. I think we covered it.
Cool.
You know, good matches, and we never talk about good matches because that's not, you know, human nature. But, good matches and a weird promo. But, I thought it was a fun show. Up and down a little bit, like you said. But, yeah, I think shows like this are needed. Not every show can be the best episode of Dynamite of all time, and I think that's healthy.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks for our on-site correspondents, our callers, our emailers. Thank you, Tyler, and thank you, listeners. And we'll talk to you all next time.